We're back. What is it? 65. We just went through this, right? Episode 65. Special guest tonight from the City of Champions, right? Brockton, Massachusetts.
That's what they tell me.
We got, I mean, you're a few different things, right? You're an author. What else?
I'm an author. I was a journalist for many years. I still consider myself a journalist. I write for Boston Magazine a little bit.
All right.
I do some political work. I do some communications work, so I wear a lot of hats.
I did a little political work yesterday.
Yeah.
didn't go over some people.
I'm the guy behind the scenes when you want to kneecap someone.
Yeah.
In the media, not literally.
Yeah.
Good song, too. Right? Kneecap.
Yeah, hood.
A hood, right?
Kneecap, yeah. But I first, what book did I get from you? Tapia? Was that you?
No. My first book, so I was a reporter at the Boston Herald, 14 years.
With Borges.
I worked with Borges,
yeah. Borges was the box, and Borges, George Kimball.
I worked with George Kimball. I mentioned George in my new book.
Really?
Which we'll get to.
George, how long has he been gone?
Animal. Now? He died, I think he died, maybe died in 09, around there, maybe.
I thought, how long have you been done with the Herald?
Right. Oh, that's what I thought you were saying.
I thought I meant done with it all.
He's done with it all, kid.
George left the Herald. He retired probably in 03, maybe even earlier. I only worked with him for a couple of years. Did some drinking with him over at Foley's, and he used to have a great bar trick. Do you know George's bar trick?
J.J. Foley's? No.
He had a glass eye. And he would take it out and put it in your fucking cup. So you'd be sitting there having a beer and you'd look over and you'd pick it up and there'd be an eyeball in it. You'd go, oh, that's mine. Pop it back in.
I know, because Richie Gillis does the same shit.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, he was a nut job. But George was one of the best boxing writers ever. He wrote a great book called Four Kings about Marvin, Hagler, Duran, Leonard, and Hearns, about that era. And I actually cite that book a few times in this one here, my new one. So
yeah,
George was a great, great inspiration.
So when I grew up, obviously Lowell was a fighting town. We had a lot of fighters out of Lowell. But I remember Mickey, and they were always good. They were always good to Mickey. You know, Borges was always good with Mickey.
George Kimball.
Yeah.
And Borges, I mean, look, there's not a more knowledgeable boxing writer in America than Ron Borges. You know, he was just a great writer, and he's still around. I talked to, saw him about 6 months ago. Ron's a great guy, great football writer too. And
yeah.
You know, I grew up in Brockton, so I'm partial to the Brockton fighters, but certainly Lowell's great fighting town too, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Petronelli's gym and the other kids there, the brothers.
Capiello's.
Yeah, Rich Capiello.
Richie and Mike.
Mike
was a good pro boxer. Had a great career. I think he had about 30, 40 pro fights. Richie's still running shows all the time.
Running some good shows out in Bridgewater. He packed that place.
He's got some great shows. He's a lot of female boxers that do very well, that have a big draw. And, you know, we got the guy now, King Kevin Walsh,
who's
fighting Saturday. I don't know if it's after
Lowell.
The show.
Yeah, main event, Lowell.
Fighting up in Lowell. It's a WBC title fight. So he's a...
I think he's ready. I think Kevin's ready for a big fight. You know,
I agree.
If he wins this, you know, knock on wood, I think he's lined up for a payday soon. I mean, he keeps winning.
Hope so. I mean, he'll be 18-0 if he wins Saturday. And this is a pretty good fight he's got Saturday. But, you know, he's carrying the torch, and he's got the Capiellos behind him, and those guys are legends in Brockton. So, you know, Richie's been doing it a long time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, those guys have been around forever. I lived in the Brockton Y when I was a kid. You know, the old Brockton Y?
I remember it well. You used to play basketball there. Yeah. I used to wave to you upstairs.
Yeah, the DYS kids, yeah.
DYS. That's how you do it?
The Brockton Y kid. No, I'm not even kidding. I would walk in to play basketball with my buddies, and I was, you know, I was a student. I didn't fuck around, you know, but walk in there to play basketball, and Wedge, look up, be my buddy Billy Gurney waving out the bars. The DYS was
that's so how it was set up.
So, was you?
Yeah, might have been me.
That's how it was set up. So the gym on the bottom floor, and then
DYS was up on top.
Yeah. Bars and everything like a jail.
Bars and everything like a jail.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And they'd walk us down to the chow hall. It was like in the basement or something. I remember, and I always say this. And by the time you took you down there, there'd be glasses of milk. The milk would be warm and the food would be cold. And I remember joking around saying, isn't it supposed to be the other way around? I think that's when you had all your hair, Mike,
in that picture.
The fun days were when they let you guys play hoop with us.
Really?
Yeah, that was good times.
They weren't bad. Yeah, but that was my only time in Brockton. I spent a lot of time in Plymouth House of Correction with a lot of Brockton guys.
Yep.
But it's a blue-collar city. I think Brockton... It might be Brockton and maybe Springfield and Lowell. Those three have the biggest high schools. And you see about Brockton High, there's been a lot of stuff there. You know, you get a lot of Cape Verdeans and Spanish, they've had a lot of trouble there in the past. And I go to Lowell High. My daughter goes to Lowell High, and I think it's the second or third biggest high school in the state. And it's crazy. And I think Brockton's ahead of it. I think Brockton might be the biggest school.
The principal down there is a good friend of mine, Kevin McCaskill. He's actually a Springfield guy. He was the principal. I think he was the superintendent in Springfield for a long time. And he's doing a great job in Brockton.
Good.
Look, I'm a Brockton guy through and through. I root for the city every day. I love the city.
Yeah, you got it.
I think they're doing a good job. You know, it's definitely a different school than when I was there. When I was there in 1988, when I graduated, probably about 50-50, minority to white. And now it's probably about 85-90. Yeah. You know, there's only 5-10% white. And doesn't matter. I mean, there's still a lot of good kids there.
Jermaine was the football coach.
Jermaine Wiggins was there. Last year, they sent two kids to MIT, two kids to Harvard.
Whoa.
They sent about 40% of the kids to some of the top schools in America.
Wow, that's really good.
They have a great graduation rate, and you know, it's still a very good school. For the top students, it's top notch. For the lower students, it's top notch.
The kids in the middle,
you're fighting for your life.
That's right.
And that's the problem in these big urban public schools like Lowell, Springfield, Brockton.
Yeah.
But that's where the parents come in my opinion. You got to know your kid.
Yeah.
If your kid's a middle of the road kid and he's going to a giant factory like Brockton, you got to help him figure it out.
No doubt. And what do you think about, I don't know about Brockton, but you think it's the same problem everywhere. But, you know, when I grew up, we all fought. I fought, right? I fought in the Civil War. There are always kids in the gym fighting everyone. Not everyone we knew, but, you know, a lot of them.
A lot.
Lowell was probably a little different than other places, but... And Brockton the same. And now I went to the Golden Gloves this year and there might have been one or two kids from Lowell. I was like, what the fuck? You know, we always had the Western gym. Yeah. We always had a lot of kids fighting and you just see it. It's not the same, you know? I mean, nothing's the same. Like you said, like when you went back there and you graduated in 88, everything's different. Not just
well,
that,
the way from our perception, of course, I'm saying we're that age. We're all the same age. Right. So
we
see things differently. Well, I'm saying, listen, the only thing constant is change, right?
Right.
So this is the way people are going to say 20 years from now when they graduate, oh my God, it's so different now. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I think it's just a generational thing. But
I think in answer, for sure.
I mean, some things die out, Mike. Some things grow and some things die.
Well, I think with boxing, I think what you're getting at is, and you see with all the sports now, like it used to be all sports, football, basketball, track, boxing. It was urban. Now it's the private schools. Now it's the nice, you know, high-end public schools because the dads who went to the public schools like us in the cities are now, they made some money, they're out in the burbs, they're doing their thing, and they're putting their kids in the best place they can put them. So now it's not unusual to see a great boxer or a great football player, a kid from Sudbury, a kid from Lincoln, a kid from Brookline. You just see the kids because their dads are bringing them up right and they're putting them in the programs.
Yeah.
That said, I think it's important to keep the programs going in cities like Lowell, Brockton, Springfield, Charlestown, Southie.
Right.
I mean, they all have, there's still great youth programs in all these cities. You just got to find them, you know?
No doubt. Now, tell us a little bit about what books have you written besides, we'll get into Marvin Hagler, who was, you know, I grew up with Marvin Hagler, Destruction and Destroy. Remember that? I'm sure you.
Oh, yeah.
You wrote
it. I'm sure it's probably in there.
Destruction and Destroy. Yeah. A few years ago, I got a call from somebody, and it was, I forget who it was, someone, I don't think it was Nikki. It was somebody, who we were, but it was from the St. Joseph Society Club. It was like Jimmy Matarano and those guys reached out to me, and Vito Interfermo was coming at the North End, and they said, can you get Mickey and bring him down and have dinner with us? So I was like, drum, like, Mickey, better not say no to this. You know what I mean? Like, Vito Interfermo, and he'd fight Hagler. He'd always cut over his eyes, and it would just be a bloodbath, like with Alan Minter, and, you know, and Hagler would fight, except for the Leonard fight, which crushed me. It's so...
Right.
Hate it to this day, even though Leonard's great. You know what I mean? Because Hagler would just go in and stand in the middle of the ring like he did with Tommy Hearns. And so we did. We went down and had dinner with Vito Interfermo and all those guys, you know what I mean? Which was really cool. And I got to know Hagler a little bit on a personal level. He would go to the Boxing Hall of Fame every year in Canastota, and me and Mickey always go. Mickey and Dickie usually go every year. Dickie didn't go this last year. He's got some health issues. And Hagler would always be there with his wife, and he had that old car, and he'd be in the parade. And we'd sit down and have breakfast with him and talk to him. And I was like, come on, you got to come. He's like, you know what? I'm coming to the gloves. I'm coming to the gloves next year. And I was always trying to get him because he was up in like Laconia. He wasn't
Bartlett.
Yeah.
Up by North Conway.
In New Hampshire somewhere. I'd be like, come on. He's like, you know what? Next year I'm going to, I got video. I'm saying, next year I'm going to be there at the gloves. And then he died. And I never really, you know, you heard some rumblings, right? Like, the heart attack, then you hear, oh, he just got vaccinated. And you know, that's the first thing I ask people. And, well, it's, you know.
I mean, look, there's a lot of, people ask me that a lot. So we'll get back to some of the other stuff. But with regards to Marvin dying, he was a pretty healthy guy. He was 66 years old, I think.
Yeah.
And he did have the shot shortly before he died, within a few weeks.
Just as I suspected.
So now, was he experiencing any health issues before that?
No, but he was a 66-year-old guy, and his heart had a good workout throughout the years. I mean,
no, but I'm saying so. But the thing is, did he have any health issues, or was suddenly?
He was a healthy guy. And he went to sleep and died. So a lot of people think that the shot killed him.
Yeah.
And maybe it did, maybe it didn't. I don't know. But I'm not a fucking doctor. I don't know. But back to your other thing. So this book, I was a reporter at the Boston Herald for 14 years. I left in 2013 and I was in the middle of the marathon bombings when that happened. Got called out in the middle of the night. I had a 2-week-old son. My wife was a reporter. She was home with the baby. And the bombs went off, and I said, I'll see you when it's done. You know, because I knew I was in the fucking shit.
Yeah.
And I came home after the third or fourth day, and I sat down, finally was trying to help, and she gives me the baby, Jackson. He's now 12. And I put him on my chest, and I said, I'm going to relax for a minute. I turn the TV on, and I see MIT police officer killed. Yeah. I pick up the baby. Sean Collier. I give the baby back to her. I go, I got to go. She goes, what are you talking about? I go, MIT cops don't get killed.
Yeah.
I said, what the fuck? Of course it's related. Of course. Yeah. So I launched back out. And as I'm on my way to Sean Collier's murder scene, we get the call about the bombs going off in Watertown. The shootout, they're throwing bombs at the cops. Speed over there. I'm in the middle of that shit, whatever. I finish, write my stories. 2 or 3 weeks later, I hook up with my co-author, Casey Sherman, who wrote a book called The Finest Hours about a famous Coast Guard rescue on Cape Cod in 1953. Chris Pine movie, Casey Affleck, phenomenal, home run, awesome movie, Disney. Casey and I hook up. Let's write this book. We wrote the book together, Boston Strong. It becomes Patriots Day, the movie with Mark Wahlberg, Pete Berg directing. So that's how I started.
I met Pete Berg. He's a big fight guy, too.
Big fight guy,
Peter Berg.
That's how I started writing books. And now this one here is my 8th book. And you mentioned Vito Interfermo.
Yeah.
I'm getting to it. Sorry.
No. Take your time. This stuff interests me anyway.
I wrote a book about Tom Brady, Whitey Bulger, Pete Frates, the kid who started the Ice Bucket Challenge. Yeah. I did this John Lennon book here with James Patterson.
This one here
was my labor of love.
Yeah.
This is a love letter.
This is the one we were talking about wearing the knot then having coffee.
The love letter to my hometown. Loved Marvin, grew up in his shadow. The first fight I ever saw, as a first professional boxing match I ever saw, I was 10 years old. My dad took me to the Boston Garden, Vito Antifermo.
Wow.
Marvin's first, and I dedicate the book to my dad and Vito Antifermo.
Okay.
Because Marvin kicked the shit out of him, split his head open, sent him to the hospital. I remember being a 10-year-old kid looking through the smoke in Boston Garden, the smoke, people smoking cigarettes. I look through and I see a guy bleeding almost to death. And I find out the next day he got 50 stitches across his head, and a guy from my hometown did it.
Yeah.
I was hooked.
Right.
You know, I loved him from that moment on.
That's awesome.
And then to bring it to today, when this book came out, I did a launch in New York City with Rosie Perez. You know, Rosie.
Of course, Rosie Perez.
White man can't jump, big boxing fan. So Rosie does an event with me down at a great bookstore in Brooklyn called Powerhouse Arena. And it's right in Dumbo, which is under the bridge.
Under the
beautiful
bridge,
neighborhood.
Right near the gym.
Right.
In Iglesias.
So we're sitting there, right? And Rosie's interviewing me. We're shooting the shit, talking about the book, Marvin, blah, 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 blah. Tell us the story. Who walks in? Vito Antifermo.
Wow.
Get the fuck out
walked
of here.
Walked in. He heard about it. And someone sent it to him. He lives in the area. He lives in the Brooklyn area. And he just came to say hello and pay his respects to
Marvin.
That's
awesome.
Great guy. You know who else was with him? Was Iran Barkley.
Oh, yeah.
Another middleweight champ. So I had two middleweight champs there that night. So this book's been a lot of fun. It's been a great ride. Rosie's awesome.
Yeah,
we're
she's
trying to make
big,
a movie out of it.
Fan.
We're working with Sam Rockwell.
Oh, really? I love Sam Rockwell.
Sam's a big fight guy. He's
big
fighter, big fight fan. Working really hard to get it done, and you know, we'll get you guys in there as corner men.
That'd be really cool.
That's what we're talking about.
That would be really cool. Sam Rockwell, he's a good actor, man.
He's great. Academy Award winner, and you know, when this book first came out, my agents, you know, sent it out to all. What happens when you do a book? The books I do, they go out on this. It's called the hot sheet, and it goes to all the studio heads in the town in Hollywood. And Sam called. He was like, I want to talk to this guy about this book. So we got on a Zoom. We talked about it. He's like, I love this story. I want to make a movie out of it. I go, so do I. Let's do it. So we teamed up, and we're working on it.
A lot of people don't know how much goes in to making a movie, you know, and then when you finally get the deal done that you're making it, how long it takes, and you know, you got people that put up the money and this and that, and there's so many key people involved to get that thing going. And going through that with Patriots Day, like how was it, and how long did it take from the beginning when it said, all right, listen, we want to do this movie, and the ball started rolling and paper started getting signed, to when that movie actually hit the theaters?
Patriots Day was quick because
a relevant topic.
Everybody knew there was going to be movies, plural, made about that. And there were three, at least three. You know, there was ours, and then there was the one with Jake Gyllenhaal.
They filmed that around Chester.
I can't remember the name of it.
What was the name of it?
It was about Jeff Bauman, the kid who lost his legs.
Those kids. Mike.
Excellent movie. Jake was great in it. And ours happened pretty quick, but it was a little bit of a roller coaster. Like, at one point, it was going to be a goddamn Lifetime movie. And then at one point, we had Casey Affleck that was going to play the main cop. And it was at Netflix. Then it got killed. Then it got canceled and blah, blah, blah. And it's all around. And then all of a sudden, we'll work with Mark Wahlberg and Pete Berg. And I was like, you know, who the hell am I? I'm a reporter from the Boston Herald. Yeah. Go ahead, boys. Here's my book. Take it. Run with it.
Yeah.
They were awesome. They had me and Casey sit at the table with them. We talked about the script. We went over some things. We told them our thoughts, just like you guys would. The most important thing to me, as a guy who grew up here and lives here and is a journalist here my whole life, I didn't want to get fucked up. I wanted to make sure that it was authentic.
Because Hollywood gets it.
I wanted to make sure it was authentic, because if it wasn't, I was going to be the one that heard it. Me.
Right.
Yeah.
Not Mark, not Paul, not
yeah,
Pete,
yeah, yeah,
not John Goodman or Kevin fucking Bacon.
Yeah.
It would be me. Dave Wedge made that, and he sucks. That guy's a jerk.
Yeah, you know, he knows that ain't true. He knows this happened.
So I had to be, you know, I feel like we did a good job. And I think if you watch the movie now, you know, it was a little shocking at the time because it was so quick. But I think if you watch it now, it held up pretty well. It's a good movie.
Good stuff. And I have a little story about that movie.
Let's hear it.
So I'm with Dickie Eklund, and he gets a call from, what was the lady's name? Perry or something from Boston?
Oh, Angela Perry.
Angela Perry calls.
Boston Casting.
Boston Casting. And Angela Perry calls, and she wants Dickie for a part in this movie. So Dickie says, you got to take me down. Me, Dickie, his nephew, Sean Eklund, we drive down they bring Dickie in and they give him, you know, the piece of paper. And I remember it said, he's like supposed to be in his underwear and he's like supposed to be like playing like a junkie, whatever. And he's like on the edge of the bed and he supposedly like, you know, killed someone, like some girl beat her up, or, and he supposedly hit her with like an iron, a clothes iron, but he was calling it a smoothie. And they said, when the cop comes in, you just got to say, you know, I just hit her with a smoothie. So they tell Dickie to say it and he goes, but a smoothie's different from where I come from. A smoothie's a blowjob. And they're like, hey, listen, just read the thing, right? And he's like, yeah, but a smoothie. And they go, all right, yeah, we get it. A smoothie's a blowjob. But here it's an iron and he calls it a smoothie. He goes, but why would he call an iron a smoothie? Now they're all standing around. The cameras are rolling, right? And they... And he's trying to read it.
I'm with Dickie on this one.
Yeah. So
he's like, you wouldn't have got the pot either.
Hey, he says, well, who calls it a smoothie? And it's back and forth. And I'm like, I wanted to get up and rip the paper out of his hand and just read it for him, right? I'm like, I could do this no problem, right? I mean, you know, everyone says that acting's easy, but you get up there and the camera's going. Oh, yeah. It's like, you know, you get
nervous. We did all right, Mike.
And so Dickie, finally, the lady, Angela Perry, says, hey, listen. Just be yourself, all right? You know what you're going to say, what it's about. If you want to put it in your own words, just be yourself. And they start the cameras again, and it's like he can't get a fucking word out, right?
Oh,
he can't do it. So we leave, and I'm like, fucking Dickie. I'm in the back seat. He's in the front. He's smoking a Newport. I go, dude, that was a fucking layup. Like, they basically wrote the part for you. All you have to do is be yourself. I remember he takes a drag of the cigarette. He turns around. He goes, it ain't easy being me.
That's a great line. Hey, listen, I heard that line 100 times and I still laugh all the time.
But Dickie should have been in that movie, man.
We had some good cameos, though. Our buddy Kenny Casey made it in.
Oh, yeah.
Kenny comes out and throws a hammer at a guy or something like that. He's like, hey, take this. And he throws it to one of the cops. And it was a lot of fun. I tell people, you know, I wish I wrote fucking Lord of the Rings or Star Wars. Like, yeah. I didn't set out my life to write a book about a terrorist attack where a little boy got killed. But it's where my journey took me, and I was in a position to do it, and I am very proud of it, and I feel like I did my job, and I feel like Pete and Mark did their jobs, and I'm super proud of it. I think it holds up well.
I think that's more than 99.9% of the people ever, that's a major motion picture about an event that's, you know, marked for life, especially in this area. I'm saying, be proud of it. I am. I think that goes without saying.
And I feel like my book, like, I think, you know, when kids learn about the Boston Marathon bombings, you know, in 20, 30, 100 years, they'll find my book, hopefully, and they'll learn, this is what fucking happened. They'll 100%. See that movie. This is what happened. And that's frankly what I'm doing now with this. Like, I'm trying to get this one. I want to get it into the Brockton Public Schools. I want to get it into the Newark Public Schools.
Because kids forget.
Because I want, it's history.
You say, who's Larry Bird? They don't know, right?
Yeah. Right.
And the same would go for him. Even though he's from Brockton, like, you know, kids.
History, you need to know it.
It's like the kids know, you know, who's on TikTok on their phone more than they know, you know, a sports player, you know, from 10, 15, 20 years before. Right. They just don't know.
Are you
know
trying to say they know Bean Shooter more than they know Marvin Hagler? It's a possibility.
I'm very passionate about my work, obviously, as you guys can tell. But, like, you know, we got a statue built to Marvin in downtown Brockton.
I was going to ask you about that. How do you think it came out? I didn't really see it.
It's fucking amazing.
It's awesome.
It's beautiful. Right. It's a beautiful.
You know how some statues messy. This, Iverson came
it's
out.
It's better than all of them, dude.
What the fuck is
it's
that?
It's
you know what
the,
I mean?
Have you guys
you had something to do with that?
Yeah.
The DeMarco one's good.
The DeMarco one's great. So the mayor of Brockton was my classmate at Brockton High, my classmate at Boston College. When he got elected right before COVID, we sat down. He goes, he wanted me to come work for him. I said, I can't work for you full time. I'm too busy. But I can consult with you. I'll help you out. He said, what do you think I should do? I said, number one, get through this fucking COVID shit. I said, number two, you need to get a statue for Marvin Hagler. He's our generation, Gen X. Right. We got to get it. If you can get that and walk, you win. And we did. It's a beautiful statue. It's downtown Brockton, and it makes me very proud. But when I wrote this book, in God's honesty, like, I'm psyched to just write a book in general. But I really wrote it because I want these kids to understand, like, these young black kids growing up in the city that feel like there's no hope. They feel like they're living in shit. They feel like their parents are broke. The school sucks. This sucks. Everything sucks. But that dude lived right where I am, right around the corner. And look what he did. He became the world champion.
Yeah.
The greatest of all time.
Tough life. Came from Newark to Brockton when he was what? 10 years old, right?
He was 15, actually. Oh, that's
something. The riots in
that,
Newark.
That was something I learned right in the book. I thought he was a little kid when he left Newark, but he was actually 15. And he came to Brockton, didn't know anyone. He never went to Brockton schools. He went to school in Newark.
Right.
I think these kids need to
know. That was the end of school.
I also think the kids in Newark need to know about him. Like, sure. This kid escaped.
Holy shit, yeah.
You know what I mean? He's a hero.
All right, I'm gonna throw a name at you.
Yeah.
Donald Wigfall.
He's all in the book, baby.
Is he really?
Oh yeah. He's a big part of Marvin's story. So Donnell Wigfall, for those that don't know, was a Brockton High football player. He was a stud. He was on the 1969 Brockton High team with a guy named Ken McAfee. Ken McAfee went to Notre Dame, was a tight end, played for the San Francisco 49ers. The Patriots, all the scouts were coming down to Brockton High to watch Ken. They all left wanting Donnell, including the Patriots. The Patriots wanted to draft Donnell Wigfall. He also was an amateur boxer at the time. Marvin moved to Brockton in 1969, right after Rocky Marciano's plane crashed. So Marvin's trainers, Goody and Pat Petronelli, have no idea what they're going to do with their life. They were opening a gym with Rocky, and he died in a plane crash. Little did they know, Marvin just moved to town. Marvin moves in, goes to a party in the projects one night, runs into Donnell Wigfall, gets his ass kicked.
Yeah. I don't know.
Gets his ass kicked.
That was the word always.
Got a tooth broken, bruised jaw. The next day, Marvin went into Vinny Vecchione's gym, Petronelli's.
Yeah.
And Vinny Vecchione ignored him. And he went in there three straight days and no one ever talked to him. So he left and went to Petronelli's, started fighting with Goody and Pat.
Imagine. Wow. What a story,
Vinny Vecchione, who went on to train Peter McNeely. He had a bunch of great fighters.
Who did he do it for? Snuffy? Yeah. What did Peter McNeely say?
Snubby.
So Vinny Vecchione, there's a great quote in the book from him. He said that, I didn't know he was going to be Marvin Hagler. You know? And that's what happened. Yeah. And then he went and fought with the Petronelli brothers, and he became, you know, one of the greatest champions of all time. It all started with him getting his ass whooped by Donnell Wigfall. It's all
they
in there.
They used to say Wigfall beat his ass in the street.
Definitely did. But Marvin got his redemption. Two of Marvin's first seven pro fights were against Wigfall, and Marvin won them both.
Yeah.
Kicked his ass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kicked his ass. I remember I used to go to the Cafe Pompeii. It's the Il Panino now.
Yeah.
So the Cafe Pompeii was on Hanover Street, and we used to go there being Lowell kids, 16, 17 years old, because it was open till 4 in the morning. I used to always run around Boston, the combat zone. When I was younger, I was fucking nutty, right? And The Cafe Pompeii, it would be open until 4 a.m. And I'd go in there. When I was 17, I was already selling drugs in a pocket full of money, thinking I was, you know, rich. And I'd go in there and always tip them good. And there'd be a line sometimes down the street, because when the clubs would get out, all the drunk college kids would be in line. And they'd make a mess and leave a dollar tip on the table. And I thought I was a big shot, you know, leaving probably back then 20, 30 bucks for a tip. So they always would let me double park. Come on, walk me in the front. And I remember the old Cafe Pompeii. They had a picture of Marvin Hagler, because he was there. He was always there. Marvin Hagler and who's the Italian fucking Chuck Mangione?
Chuck Mangione.
And the other one. And Pavarotti, maybe. But yeah, Mangione and
so,
Marvin
the trumpet
Hagler.
Player. The trumpet player.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll do you one better, Mike, right? When I used to go there, I used to – Ronnie Marino was the owner's son.
Yeah,
Joe
Marino
was the owner's son. And Mario was the owner. And they had
Mario.
A sister, too.
Mario had the fro, too, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I remember them.
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you know them. And I'm still friendly with them today, actually.
Wow,
Mario's
really?
Dead. Yeah. So I talked to Joe. Joe and Ronnie, they're having some health issues. But we've been waiting to hook up since I've been out of prison. But I used to go there. And I got treated like royalty there, like, you know, not then like today, like, you know what I'm saying? And I'd be hanging out with them and they were like, yeah, that's Marvin Hagler. And I'd be like, yeah, I know it's Marvin Hagler. I said, what's he doing? It sounds like he's speaking broken English. He goes, no, he speaks fluent Italian. He's doing spaghetti westerns in Italy now. Yeah. I'm like, what? He goes, like, yeah, he's an actor in Italy. He lives in Italy.
Yeah.
Well, that's how me and you started talking about
so,
that.
So what?
Ironically enough, in Dolce, which was.
Yeah. Okay.
So
what happened was that, you know, Marvin beats Donnell Wigfall, goes on this incredible run, becomes a world champion, has all these great fights. You know, Duran, Hearns, Leonard, loses the fight. I know he didn't lose. We all know he didn't lose.
Yeah,
whatever.
That was hot.
Retires. Okay, retires because he had enough. And I explained it all in this book why he I don't talk about the Leonard fight in this book, but you'll understand why he didn't come back when you read this book, because Marvin had a couple of really bad decisions early in his career. One with Vito Interfermo, another one with a guy named Boogaloo Watts down in Philly at the Spectrum. Marvin got robbed, and he fought Don King. He fought the corruption in the boxing industry for many, many years. When he lost that Leonard fight, or lost the decision, it was the straw that broke the camel's back. He said, fuck this, I'm done. This town sucks. Never going to get a fair shake. Moved to Italy. He also was having problems with his wife at the time, Bertha.
Unbeknownst to me.
You know, he was having some domestic violence shit and all this stuff. And he got divorced, moved to Italy. He wanted to put everything behind him. And he met Kay, his second wife. And she was an amazing woman, Italian woman, who he loved and was with until the day he died. Learned to speak fluent Italian and became an actor in movies. Spent the end of his life in Italy. And then he had a little house in North Conway up in the White Mountains. Yeah. And he split his time between the two. So he'd come home and spend his time in North Conway with the Petronelli brothers. Come on up and see me. Have his kids up, his grandkids, all that shit.
Right.
And that's where he died.
Wow.
That's where he died in 2022.
Yeah. Fucking sucks. What a legend, Hagler.
Listen, everyone that is from our generation wishes he came back and fought again. Yeah. But you know what? It's for the best that he didn't. Because what if he got robbed again?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's what I think he knew. He knew he was, look at that. Look at that. Like, look at that. You can't get better than that.
Remember him training?
You can't
remember
get better than that.
Remember him running in the sand dunes with boots on? I remember all that shit.
Let me ask you that. So
that's the picture right there.
Look at that. Yeah, am I good or what?
Nice.
My surprise the other day?
Let me ask you this.
That's in P-Town, Provincetown.
Yeah. They used to say that he would like leave like a one-day growth on his head, and that's how he would like, you know, when he was.
Some people said that. They said he would.
Was any veracity to that?
I don't think so. Listen, a lot, like Vito Interfermo claimed he headbutted him. Alan Minter claimed he headbutted him. But if you go back, you're a fight guy.
Yeah.
Go watch
the fights. Well, not as much as Mike. I'm saying Mike knows everything.
Whatever. Go watch the fights. Did he bump them? Yeah. Did he cut their head open with his head? No.
Right.
He kicked the living shit out of these guys.
That's true.
Look at how Roberto Duran fought.
If you watch that Minter fight, he punched Alan Minter in that second and first half of the third round. He must have punched him 100 times. And these were not blocked shots. They were open shots. I mean, Marvin was a machine.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, again, look at him.
Yeah.
Like, that's the top, that's peak physicality. You know, you can't get tougher than that. So it was a pleasure to write the book. You know, he was an idol of mine, and, you know, it's my love letter to the city I grew up in. I'm hoping we make the movie. You know, it's just an amazing, amazing story. The guy's a legend, you know, like you said.
Yeah.
Much like the fighter, by the way, with Dickie and Mickey. I mean, those guys are legends.
Yeah.
They put Lowell on the map.
Oh, no,
like,
question.
What that did for the city of Lowell, I want to do that with this for Brockton.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Yeah, and Mickey now, he's like the face of the Hall of Fame up there.
100%,
he's a big draw up there. And
people love the guy.
Before it was Basilio, Consilio, the onion farmer, because he was from there. So he was like, and Bacchus, but and he died. Mickey's kind of like, you know, and I mean, I want him to get in the Hall of Fame. I know people say, he never won a real belt. Like, people will talk shit, but what he did for boxing, fought his fucking heart out.
Yeah.
Come back, I mean, you see Mickey, he never slipped, he never dodged anyone, never been fucking knocked out. The guy just fought bangers one after another.
Right.
And I talk about it a lot. You see kids fight today, and they put them in with fucking 15, 20 bums in a row, build up their record, then throw them in with fucking Bud Crawford or something. You know what I mean? I mean, there comes a time. Well, I mean, I get it. I look at
a guy like Mickey, and I think, you know, in today's era, he would be a world champ with probably 3 belts.
Yeah.
You know, but in his era, he changed the game because of the fights he had against Gotti.
Yeah.
Those two fights were just, I mean, two of the greatest fights of all time.
Magic.
But he also was just such an absolute warrior, and such a, he was so dedicated to his craft that, like, he does belong in the Hall of Fame. And I will say, the movie The Fighter, because of that movie, he belongs in the Hall of Fame. Like, Sylvester Stallone's in there because of it. You know, this guy's in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Good
that
point.
Never played baseball.
Hey, that's a very good point.
Put him in there for The Fighter.
Yeah.
Put Dickie in there too.
Yeah, right.
That's a good point, right?
Yeah.
Sylvester Stallone's in there for, never boxed around in his life.
He's in there for Rocky.
Imagine.
Let's get him in there, baby. Let's go. I'll write the letter.
So, do you know that? Now, Dave, do you know that Mickey was instrumental in getting Mike sober? That's how Mike got so
No,
long.
I didn't know.
Did
that.
You know that's how close they are? They're like, best friends.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Has he been on the show? Richie Bryan's his best friend. But we're close.
Has Mickey been on the show?
No.
All right.
We got a
shout out to Mickey Ward.
That's all right.
Let's get you in the middle seat.
Yeah, I've talked
about
this.
Well, we're also going to get Mickey Ward in the Marvin Hagler movie. Yeah. We'll get him a cameo.
Yeah. So Dickie's been on here.
Okay, great.
But Mickey hasn't.
What episode
Mickey,
is Dickie? What episode is Dickie? I'd like to watch it.
We have to look back.
We got to find
I'm 35.
Justin,
I know
Justin
that.
Will find out. But when I was strung out, back out of prison again, I was back out, I was junked out, and Mickey come up to me and offered to get me down to Florida. He's doing something with Mike Tyson, a guy down there in a gym in around Deerfield Beach, Florida, and he asked me if I wanted to get in some rehab, and I said no, and I just got out again, and I got back on the methadone clinic and back on the dope, and Mickey's sister, Cindy, just passed away, and I went to the wake, and we're in line, and there was a fucking 100 people in line. He says, Mike, you ready to go? And I says, no, I'm good. I get on the methadone clinic. I remember he goes, no, like, bad move, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was a bad move for me. I mean, it helps a lot of people, but for me, it was just, you know, and soon
replacement.
Enough. Yeah, and you know, you think, you know, I'm selling drugs, I'm doing this and that, doing the methadone, and it just, I ended up catching a case, and now I didn't want to detox in jail. It was a bad scene, but I ended up making the call, and he got me down to Florida on St. Patrick's Day 2013 in a place, the Florida House in Deerfield Beach, Florida, and I've been sober ever since now, fucking 12 years.
Love it, buddy.
12 years, 6 months.
Congratulations.
Yeah, 12 years,
so
six
listen,
months.
So listen, Mike, tell him the line that I love that Mickey said to you when you walked in the door. He said to you.
So he picks me up at Fort Lauderdale Airport, and he's driving me to this place, and he puts me on the phone. So he had told me, because detox from a methadone is brutal. So I said, Mickey, you know, leading up to it, he goes, this place is beautiful, full medical staff on site. I said, do they got methadone? He says, yeah. They got methadone, you know, they'll bring you down real slow. So I'm like, all right, good. So he picks me up at the airport, and I'm, you know, I'm pounding down drinks, and, you know, I ran out of dope, but I was getting high. I was starting to get a little sick, and he's got me on the phone, and he's coming from the gym, right? And he is fucking ripped in great shape, right? And he's got this, I tell him to this day, he had this like green tea. I think it was for someone else, but I'm looking at it, and then the guy got me on the phone. He's like, you know, so what are you on, you know? I'm like, yeah, everything but roller skates, you know, I mean, fucking Xanax, Klonopin, methadone, heroin, coke. I'm drinking every day, you know. Are you smoking it, sniffing it? IV drug. Yep. Any disease, HIV, and they're making it down. Like, no, hepatitis C. Yeah, but I'm just looking at Mickey, and he's just
the picture of health.
The picture of health. And I'm like, what a fucking loser I feel right? Like, you know. So we pull up to this place, and he gets out, and he walks me up to the door, and they're like, oh, you know, you can't come in from here. And he said, and he when he tells the story, he's like, my face, I was so fucked. Like, you know, when he tells the story, it's funny, you know. And he said, hey, Mike. I said, yeah. He goes, this is the last time you got to do this.
All right. That's amazing. Wow. It just gave me goosebumps again. Like,
He goes, you're never going to do this again. And I'm looking at him like, wow. And I walked in. And
words of wisdom.
And I said, when do I get my methadone? And they said, yeah, we don't have methadone here.
What are you talking about? We ain't got methadone here. Mike was ready to leave. Ready to walk out.
He should be in the Hall of Fame for that.
Right? Just for that. Imagine getting the... they said in Lowell, right? They used to say, like, people would be, like, drug addicts anywhere, like, and it kind of rings true anywhere. They said, like, wait a minute. If Mike Lee can stop shooting dope, anybody can stop shooting dope. Anybody.
Yeah.
Anybody anywhere.
Yeah.
If he can do it, anybody can do it.
Yeah.
So that's the type of drug addict that he was. He got sober, and Mickey was instrumental in that.
Yeah,
Hall of Fame.
He belongs in the Hall of Fame for that, Mike.
Yeah, I owe him everything.
Honestly, look, I've you know, there's very few fighters in my generation that I look up to as much as Marvin, and Mickey's one of them.
Yeah.
I think Tommy Hearns is one of them for me. You know, I think Mike Tyson was one of the greatest of all time. And I think Larry Holmes was one of the best of all time, you know. But if you guys make a move to get Mickey in the Hall of Fame, I'd support it 100%.
Yeah.
I'll call Ron Borges. Call them all.
Yeah.
You just got to build a movement. You know, he deserves it. Deserves it.
He does deserve it, you know, and
but maybe position it that way. Like, maybe it's not just a numbers and fight wins thing. Maybe it's the fighter. His symbol to the sport.
Yeah. Look at Tony DeMarco. It took him fucking
part of it.
I mean, back then there was how many weight classes? You know,
right?
Six or eight, whatever it was back then. He was.
But the fights that Mickey Ward had, they don't have those kind of fights anymore.
No, I know.
The best one, the guy was counting them out. He goes, "Yeah, I don't even know why this guy's here."
You know, hey, you know what's crazy?
Now listen, what was that fight, Mike? That you keep showing me the clips of?
When he hit Antonio, what's his name with the body shot there? Fucking Diaz is Diaz, but. When it was Lamp, and I was just with Lampley and Roy Jones Jr., and I know it verbatim. And, you know, the pay-per-view fight, they should be getting their money back for this fight, you know? And, yeah, Larry Merchant, this is what's wrong with boxing. And then Lampley's like, "Well, Ward got him with a body shot there." And Roy Jones is like, "Yeah, maybe he'll do it." And then, boom, game over. And then Larry Merchant's like, "What am I looking at here?" And Lampley goes, "You are looking at the most unlikely knockout you'll ever see from Mickey Ward from Lowell, Massachusetts."
And
I was with Lampley and Roy Jones Jr. I should have fucking, I was just down there with them. Both of them were there. Lampley's there a lot.
Lampley just wrote a book.
Did he?
Yeah, he just wrote a book. Yeah, it's been doing pretty well.
I was sitting with him and Ross Greenberg. You know that?
I know the name. Yeah,
he's an HBO guy.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And you don't.
What about
think
the girl?
I don't know who.
The girl that.
Oh, Sydney Sweeney.
Yeah, Sydney Sweeney.
Oh,
yeah.
Just a little girl named Sydney Sweeney.
Yeah, no.
Oh, that's the female boxer movie.
Yes.
Right? Is that Ron's book?
Is it?
I think it's Ron's book.
No fucking way. The Coal Miner's Daughter.
I think
that's the book.
I might be wrong, but I think it's Ron's book.
Well, that's why I was saying that. Holy the guy's shit. A writer. Yeah. I'm saying that's...
But getting back to sitting with Lampley and Ross Greenberg at the fights, they were sitting in the two seats right in front of me, actually. And I was right behind them, just like being in the conversation. And then one time, like, Lampley's like,
it.
"All right, Ross, Butterbean's real name." I'm like, "Eric Esch." I'm injecting myself in the conversation, but... I didn't realize at the time until people were coming up to Ross and Lampley, but it was the golden age of boxing, that HBO, Boxing After Dark.
Oh, yeah.
There were so many great fucking fights then in the early 90s, right? Early to mid-90s.
So I interviewed a guy named George Krieger for this book and also Bob Arum, who's now 95. I went out to Vegas. I went out to Vegas and spent a weekend with Bob. When I was researching this book, and one of the guys I interviewed that Bob said, "You need to talk to George Krieger." George Krieger was the first executive of HBO Boxing. And George told me if there was no Marvin Hagler, there would have been no HBO Boxing, maybe no HBO Sports.
Really?
He was their first big box office star. He was before Tyson, he was a bigger star. He was a bigger draw than Leonard and the rest of them, because Leonard was ABC, you know, he's Wide World of Sports and all that.
Yeah.
HBO was launching their own brand, and Marvin was the guy.
Wow.
And Marvin was box office. And those first couple of fights that Marvin had after he beat Alan Minter were HBO boxing fights. And it started closed circuit boxing, which became cable, which
CCTV.
Became now.
Imagine.
Became it all.
Yeah.
So without, you know, Marvin was a big part of that. And Bob Arum told me when, again, it's in the book, Bob said that, you know, Marvin was hugely, you know, instrumental in the development of the sport. But Bob said that he was his favorite fighter personally. He said, "I never met a guy that I cared about and rooted for more than Marvin Hagler." He said he was the best fighter I ever saw.
Wow.
That's what Bob Arum said.
That's awesome.
Which is cool. Imagine. I mean, to hear it from someone like that in Vegas.
You know? Yeah.
Of all places.
Yeah, the
95 years old. He had no stake in the game. He was just telling me how he felt. You know, he was like, "I love the guy." What he loved about him was how loyal he was to the Petronelli brothers.
Yeah.
And because Don King, as you probably know, tried to steal Marvin away.
Yeah.
And Marvin told him to go fuck himself. And actually, when they tried to make the Leonard fight, I think it was Arum was making the fight. And he said, "Listen," he went to Goody and Pat, because Marvin wasn't going to fight Leonard, didn't want to do it. And he went to Goody and Pat and said, "Listen, we got to make this fight." And Goody and Pat said to Arum, we'll reduce our fee." And Arum went to Marvin and said, "Goody and Pat said they're going to reduce your fee. You're going to make more money." Marvin hit the fucking roof. He said, "This conversation's over." Went back to Goody and Pat. "You guys get your full amount. Don't ever fucking do that again. Don't ever undercut me again."
Man.
He was pissed because his own guys were going to take less money so he could have the fight. He wanted them to have exactly what they deserved. That's who he was.
Yeah, and there's
just
so much,
loyal.
There's,
loyal.
You don't see anymore. There's so
you
much.
You don't see that loyalty anymore.
There's so
in
much
sports.
Shit in the boxing game too.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fucking.
It was messy.
Yeah,
that whole fight was a. You know that whole fight.
I hate
a disgrace,
it. I was in Borough House of Correction.
You watched
in jail,
you
Mike?
Watched
yeah.
in there?
Yeah.
They showed it to you in there?
Yeah. No, yeah. What was that? I think 87?
It was
87.
Yeah. 1980s. June of 1987.
Yeah, June of 87. Yeah. I went in in March.
Yeah.
Like that. Wow.
Yeah, terrible decision. One of the worst ones I ever saw in my life. But the Vito Antifermo one in their first fight was probably just as bad.
Yeah.
But listen, Marvin was a hero. I wrote this book because I want the people to know his story. And, you know, not just the people who brought him, but people of the world. Like, they need to understand, like, what this guy went through to become the champion that he was and how humble he was through it all.
How did you come up with the title, Dave?
That's a good one.
That's him.
So I got to tip my hat to my boy Casey Sherman for that.
Okay.
So Casey and I wrote, we've written 6 books together, and we were just hanging out one day talking about the book, and he's a big boxing fan. He actually used to carry spit buckets for Marvin down in P-Town.
Wow.
And he said, I think you need to call it Blood and Hate. But what it means basically is, you know, the hate is the riots and the corruption that Marvin faced in his career. Right. The blood is the blood that he sweat, you know, the blood that came out of him when he was making these fights, but the blood he inflicted on these guys.
Right.
I mean, you go back and watch those YouTube fights, Johnny.
Yeah.
Guy left a lot. He sent more guys to retirement than probably anyone in boxing.
Wow.
He put like 4 guys in a row in Mass General Hospital on Boston Garden.
John the Beast.
They might as well have had a monorail going from the Garden to Mass General.
Wow, there you go.
John the Beast Mugabe. Yeah.
That was actually one of Marvin's toughest fights.
Really?
John the Beast Mugabe almost beat him. And actually, there's a lot of people that say that's why Leonard won the fight, because Leonard watched that fight.
Mugabe fight,
and he saw vulnerabilities of Marvin in that fight. Yeah,
Bill Belichick.
Yeah,
he was looking for the holes in the defense.
Leonard wasn't one of the best for no reason. He did his work, you know.
Yeah. You know, it's like you know when you just touched on with Bob Arum saying he was his favorite fighter. There's just some fighters you love to watch. Like I always think of James Toney, right? When James
Lights Out
would come in, and he was in shape. You know, he got older, he got heavier, and this and that. But just unbelievable. But there's guys you love to watch, and there's like Floyd Mayweather, Leonard, and not to knock Mayweather, right? I mean, like Mickey always said, there's levels to this stuff, and he's just that good. He can talk shit. You know what I mean?
Right.
You can't hit the guy. He's a great fighter, but I don't want to watch him. I mean, I don't like watching a technical fighter throwing jabs and scoring points and staying away and throwing 2 punches and running
away.
You
want to see a street fight
in the ring, I get it. You know, in the middle of the ring, just, you know, letting it all fucking hang out, right? And just
so look, to me, the generation I grew up in, I'm 55 years old, and I will never, ever remember or see 2 fighters that made me riveted and not want to look away any more than Marvin Hagler and Mike Tyson.
When they stepped in the ring,
you knew that some shit was about to go down.
Yeah.
They looked like rocks. They were chiseled from stone.
Yep.
They were steely-eyed. They were ready to kill.
Yeah.
And you just don't see that. You don't see it anymore.
No.
You see fake that. But you don't see the real that.
Yeah. No, I agree with that.
Tyson.
You know, Marvin got in the ring and you knew, like, okay, there's trouble here.
Yeah.
And, you know, Leonard was able to point him away like Mayweather. He Mayweathered him. That's what he did.
Yeah.
But, you know, if they fought again, I would like to think Marvin would have taken him out. But who knows? We'll never know.
And you still get some people to this day that, you know, no, Leonard won. I watched it.
Yeah, I knew I was going to have that.
I've watched it 100 times.
I don't like to watch it again, especially if it's someone I know
so
that
I had
like
to watch. I had to watch it for this book because I knew this was going to be a big talk. Everyone's going to want to talk about it. So I wanted to be educated. I watched the fight again about 3 months ago, the whole thing. And my honest to God's assessment is that it was a draw and Marvin keeps his title.
Yeah.
That's what happened. Marvin didn't beat him, but he certainly didn't beat Marvin.
Yeah.
And as Marvin said after the fight, he said, you got to knock out the champ. You got to hurt the champ. And I agree with that. If you don't hurt the champ, you don't take his title.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how did they, so what was the end decision? How did they justify that?
Two judges had it within 1 round each. The third judge had it 3 or 4 rounds different. And that was the corrupt judge, in my opinion.
That's the
fucking crook. The guy was in the tank for Vegas, showmanship, money, Leonard.
Wow, what a shame.
Hey, that's
money,
what I think.
Boys, that guy got everything.
That's what I think.
Yeah, 100%. What's your take on Nomas? What do you think happened there when Roberto Duran quit against Leonard?
Well, I think that, you know, Roberto Duran fought a lot of wars, including one to Marvin Hagler, including to Tommy Hearns, I think.
Tommy Hearns hit him well. Duran was never knocked out right before that. I mean, that fight, he got knocked to the moon. But.
And I think, if I remember correctly, Duran was approaching 40 when he fought that fight against Leonard, right?
All right.
Was it around that? I mean, it was later,
a guy
later,
who would
later
never
in his
quit,
career.
Who would
never
fucking
quit.
Fight. To
but, you know, read Four Kings by our pal George Kimball, and you'll get it all. But, I mean, end of the day, these guys are warriors, and I'm not going to say Roberto Duran was full of shit. Yes. I'm not going to say he was faking. I mean, he got his ass kicked. He was done. He had enough, you know?
Yeah. They fucking...
I don't...
They wanted to kill him at Panama.
I do have to say, I don't think a guy like Marvin Hagler or Tommy Hearns would ever do that. You'd have to knock him out.
Yeah.
Mickey Ward would die in the ring.
Yeah, die in
the ring. So it was a little depressing to see that. So to me, that's why I will never put Duran in that conversation of the great fighters.
Yeah.
Because he quit.
Wow. Yeah. Interesting.
Am I wrong?
Mickey loses.
Who likes a quitter?
Mickey loses his shit when someone doesn't answer the bell or quits on the stool or fucking a knee, let someone count him out. Mickey goes fucking nuts. It kills him.
Mickey would die in the ring.
Yeah,
I love
would.
That.
He'd fucking die.
I kind of feel like you should. You know what I mean? I leave it all in the field. Every time I do whatever I do, when I write a book, I leave it all in the field. People want to fucking stab me, shoot me, kill me, go ahead. But I leave it all in the field. I put it all out there.
I got one for you.
And I think you got to. You know,
I was just in Colombia. No, I was in Costa Rica.
Costa Rica after Colombia.
He went to Costa Rica after Colombia. This girl I know, she had her cousin down there. She goes, "Oh, let's go see her down in Guanacaste." And we were down there, and she's like, "Oh, my cousin's from Nicaragua." And I go, "Oh, what's your name?" She said her name, and it was something Aguayo.
Alexis Aguayo.
And I said, "Alexis Aguayo." And she goes, "That's like my." That was my cousin.
Warrior.
I was like, wow.
Did he fight Mickey?
No. But Kevin Rooney, man, he hit Kevin Rooney with a fucking punch, almost took his head off. He fought Aaron Pryor when what was it, Panama Lewis was fucking giving him, I don't know, give him the drink from the other bottle, and he almost fucking killed him. Panama Lewis is the one who put the plaster.
But he's another one. You look at a guy like Alexis Aguayo, he's not saying no mas.
Yeah.
Aaron Pryor is not saying no mas. You know what I mean? And I don't mean to take anything away from Roberto Duran because I don't know what he was feeling in that moment. But to me, that's you dropped a level to me at that point.
Yeah.
What
do
you agree?
I didn't know if you were going to say he got paid off or what happened. I remember at the time I had a steak with orange juice and my stomach hurt and all this stuff. And all over the years, I always thought, did he just take a fucking satchel of cash?
Here's one for you.
I just didn't see him quit.
When Marvin fought Tommy Hearns, right? Hearns broke his hand in the first round, but he finished the fight.
Yeah.
He didn't quit.
Imagine. Yeah.
He didn't say, I'm done.
He
didn't say, I need to stop. I need a disqualification. And he could have.
Yeah.
That's kind of what Duran did. Like, to me, that's a sign of weakness.
Yeah.
In that game. You're in that game. I mean,
you're in the fight game.
A lot of great fighters out of there. Tommy Hearns, Kronk Jim, Emmanuel Stewart. I mean, a ton of them out of Detroit.
Yeah.
Ton of great fighters.
Mike, did you know that he was such a fight?
No, I know Cole. He's just like, I got this guy coming in, you know.
I'm not the fight expert, but I did grow up in Brooklyn.
You sure sound like one.
I'm 55, so, you know, we grew up watching boxing.
We watched the best ever in boxing. Like, we did, I think, in most sports.
I became good friends with Michael Mora. I'm friends with Michael Mora.
Great fighter.
I know.
Great fighter, yeah.
He was in the Kronk, just banging people out.
Michael Mora was a great heavyweight.
Yeah,
great fighter, yeah.
Sucks he's known for just getting knocked out by fucking... George Foreman, you know, when you say his name, people say that. And it's like,
so a lot of people talk to me about the Petronelli brothers and all that. And one of the guys that I tell them, they're like, who else did they train? He had Irish Stevie Collins.
Oh, yeah.
Great fighter. And they had Drake Thadze, who was a great heavyweight. I think he fought for a title. And I believe they had Kevin McBride, who was the last guy to beat Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
Before Jake Paul.
If you consider
that.
So what do you think about that?
I think it brings a lot of eyes to the sport. I think he's, you know, trying to steal it back from MMA, getting the young kids interested. I like that. I also think the kid is an athlete.
Oh, there's no question about it.
He was a D1 wrestling champ.
No doubt about that.
Like, I wouldn't want to fight him.
I just think, like, they showed some of these advertisements, Mike, and I'm sure you've seen on Instagram. It looked like Mike Tyson was a million times faster. When you've seen the real-life fight, it looked like it was in slow motion. Yeah. The comparison, when you juxtapose those two things, you're like, wait a minute, somebody lied to us here,
well, I think. I agree, but here's what I think of. When you watch, and you know this from watching fights, like, training is very different than fighting. You can train. You can be the fastest guy in the gym. You get in the ring, and you get a guy. Jake Paul
punched in the face, well, right?
Jake Paul's 30 years younger than him. 100%. He's probably just as fast, if not faster. He is.
No question.
And he's just as strong, and he's bigger.
Yeah.
So maybe when Mike got in there, he couldn't swing, and he ran out of gas. I don't know.
Karen, to me, it was a payday, and hey, good for them. Fuck it.
You know, yeah, I think it's great. I think he's good for the sport. Now, I would like to see him fight. I'd like to see him keep escalating and fight.
Davis.
When's that fight?
Well, the Davis, I don't know. But I mean, fucking Davis can knock his head off, I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, these guys could have a plan for like one. Like, hey, you know what I mean?
Listen, the kid is fucking tough.
Yeah.
He's tough. He can take a punch. Like, I'd like to see
him take. Who did he play last? Jose, Cesar Chavez.
He knocked him out.
Yeah, now he's in fucking...
He's not just beating guys, though. He's dropping them.
Yeah.
He's dropping these guys.
Yeah.
And even if they're washed up or past their prime or whatever, he's dropping them.
Yeah.
And that's not easy, no matter... These are big guys. Like, you know, you fight a 25-year-old kid that you're way better than. Yeah. Still going to take a lot for you to drop the kid.
Yeah.
You know, it's not easy. So I give him respect.
Yeah. And like I said, he's bringing a lot of eyes to the boxing. And I mean, he's the biggest fucking draw there is right now.
Yeah.
You got guys like, what's his name there? Better Beev, and the other one, Bimal. What's his name? Dimitri Bivol. They just fought, right? These guys are unfucking believable, undefeated, one loss, right? No one knows who they are.
Right.
They're fucking unbelievable.
Jake Paul's
fighting, right?
I'm looking biggest forward to the there is. Canelo
shout
Crawford.
Out, shout out John Iceman Scully, who's with BWF there. He's in his corner and stuff. He's in the gym with him. You know John Scully?
I don't know.
He's from Hartford, Connecticut. Okay. He's been in the fight game forever.
Nice.
But now he's...
I'm looking forward to the Canelo Crawford fight. That should be good.
You know what? It's like I want to just go out
that's
there
a,
and
that's
say,
a, that's a
Mike wants to go. Yeah, Mike wants
people,
to go.
People are talking me out of Bud Crawford winning, like, oh, he's going up and weight. Canelo's too strong for him. And Canelo is strong, but every time I see Bud Crawford fight, I don't see many holes in his fucking.
He's a hell of a fighter.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a good fight.
You think he can beat Canelo?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Omaha, Nebraska, but people say, he's going up and weight, the weight, he can, da da da. But I don't know. I think he can.
I mean, you know, Mike. I'm saying you're educated in the fight game. I'm saying
I wish Canelo would have beat fucking Mayweather. But I know. They put him in there. When
I know.
He was fucking young.
But what I like about it is it's a real big gate fight.
Yeah.
You know, it's a real one.
They made it happen. Now they never make these fights happen.
It's not a crock of shit. It's not fake. It's not YouTube. It's a real fight.
Yeah.
You know. And it's at a huge stadium, sold out, San Antonio, right? Big giant stadium.
I thought it was in Vegas. It's in
San Antonio. I'm sorry. You're right. It's in Vegas. It's at the stadium in Vegas. Wherever the Raiders play, it's at that stadium.
Oh, Las Vegas.
Yeah. Really?
It's at the stadium where the Raiders play. What's the name of that stadium?
I don't know. It's in the middle of Las Vegas. They're the Las Vegas Raiders right
now.
That's
a big fight.
And it's probably one of the nicest stadiums in the whole country.
You got King Callum Walsh on the undercard fighting Fernando Vargas Jr.'s kid. Dickie Eklund Jr. is in the corner with Callum Walsh.
Nice.
Yeah, I like him.
Yeah, I got to get down.
Good kid, yeah.
Fucking Vegas, it's tough. It's tough. You know, everything's
they denied me. It's the only place I got denied going.
Really?
Yeah. They let me go to Columbia. They won't let me go to Vegas.
Yeah.
Right. Who's that?
I ain't arguing.
Federal parole?
No, you know what it is? It's Vegas, actually. It's the probation office in Las Vegas. You have to go there. You have to go check in. It's just they put you through so many hoops. You got to give them like 2-month notice. So, you know, just 2 months. It's not, I mean, it's just. It's insanity.
It's not worth it.
Like, there's worse guys there than you. I can promise you that.
No, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Vegas is fun, but you know, it's so expensive.
Not a big fan of the city.
And I'm not a big gambler, so Medellin it doesn't mean much
day.
To me.
I don't know, but that's
you know.
You like that place.
I like Medellin. Mike, it's his fault.
Hey, the kids don't gamble anymore, you know, the casinos.
They gamble on their phones.
Yeah, they gamble on their phones.
Yeah.
He just
I love the casino.
He just made 7 bets 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, I love to get a ticket. You get
I'm a horse race guy.
Yeah, give me a ticket.
Yeah. Then my dad was a Suffolk Downs guy.
Oh, I loved it. I was hooked.
Yeah. Grew up going to Suffolk Downs. We went to Saratoga every summer and
loved
the horses. Bobby's my boy.
Was
he? He's great. Yeah, he's a great guy. Yeah,
he was, and he was.
Sportsman was awesome. Yeah, what? No, he's Channel 4.
Yeah, Bob Channel 4. Bob Neumeier.
Yeah, Bob Neumeier.
At the end of his career, he was the color analyst for the Derby.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, he was such a big horse guy.
He
knew me was a good guy.
Yeah, I got some pics from Neumeier.
He's coming to like he's passed away.
He passed away
just recently, right?
4 or 5 years ago.
Time flies, doesn't it?
Yeah, I know. That was a great generation of guys. Bob Neumeier was a good dude.
Yeah. How about his one that wasn't so great a guy?
Let me guess. Bob Gamier.
Candle Pins for Cash, kid.
Gamier.
Candle Pins for Cash.
So I got a great Bob Gamier story. Nice. So one night, I went to Boston College and we're drinking like fucking idiots on a Tuesday afternoon after class, and some old smelly, surly dude comes over and starts like acting creepy and being weird. We're like, hey, you guys go to Boston College? It was fucking Gamier. And I almost knocked the guy out. And I'm not a tough guy, but I was getting pissed. I was like, yeah, okay, that's funny. He wouldn't stop. Just kept being a jerk.
Yeah.
And finally the bartender comes over. He goes, you know, that's Bob Gamier from Candle Pins for Cash.
Candle Pins for Cash. I said, that was the first thing I said.
I don't give a shit. I was like, I'm just trying to have this $1 draft that I have because I'm a broke college kid. Get him away from us. And he finally kicked Gamier out. And that was it. 2 weeks later, he got arrested for child porn.
Yeah. No!
Got stabbed trying to grab a guy thong in a bathroom. Yeah. Yeah. Gamier was known.
Yeah.
That's why he was eyeing the BC kids up like a leg of lamb.
Like a leg of lamb.
He was throwing it out there.
Oh, man. I didn't know that part about him.
The great Gamier.
I can't believe I knew you were going to talk about the great Gamier.
I know. You believe you knew that? You believe you knew that?
Well, we're talking gambling.
That shit is crazy.
The great Gamier. And when he was arrested for that child porn internet sting, his email was Great Gamier. The Great Gamier.
Yeah, he used his own email.
AOL.com.
Yeah, the Great Gamier at hotmail.com.
Yeah. Nice. The Great Gamier. I think he died.
He's no longer with us, yeah.
Really?
I want to say his kid went to school with us or something, but it was a very embarrassing affair there.
Yeah, well, anytime that's involved.
So, yeah, I apologize to the Neumeier family for bringing up the great Gamier in the same fucking
Oh, they're aware of it.
Or it's the great Gamier. But, yeah, Dave, thanks for coming on. It was great. Yeah. Anything else you want to tell us about your other book? Did that just come out? Anything else?
No. I've got 8 books. I'm about to write my 9th. You know, this one came out in June. Very excited about, like I said, working on a movie with Sam Rockwell. This one here, Riding with Evil, was the book before this one. This came out in 2022. This is about the only police officer that ever infiltrated the Pagans motorcycle gang. And your fans and your viewers will know that the Pagans were the rivals of the old Hells Angels that Johnny Bart over here used to tangle with a little bit.
Yeah.
So I think Johnny's going to like that book a lot.
I'm definitely going to
read
it.
We got a movie in the works on that as well. We got a nice script. Yeah. Imagine. We're working with a production company.
And he got my book. He read it and gave it back to me the next day and said, listen.
No. So then while I was getting to it, man, come on, jump on the gun. Slow your roll. Get back on Medellin time. Full disclosure, Johnny's got an incredible story and he gave me some of his materials and I'm going through them and I'm going to talk to my agent about it. And if there's an opportunity to write your story, I'd love to because I think it is an incredible story.
Awesome.
So maybe we'll be back to talk about Johnny's book.
Well, hold on. What? You heard about my story?
Hey, in the meantime, Mike,
Boston
Magazine kid.
We could do a Boston Magazine.
Whenever I do a magazine article, I take Mike with me.
It's a package deal.
Mike's got to be with me. It's just the way we do it.
No, but you guys do a great job. Your podcast is awesome. People love it. And, you know, it's hard work. So thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming. Good stuff, man. Good stuff.
We got to get a picture.
I can't wait to give my father this because my father is a huge, huge fight guy. My father was he's 82 years old. He was a huge Sugar Ray Robinson guy, but grew up, you know, when they were kids, it was football, fucking.
I talk about that in the book. Dude, we're like mental plane, same.
Yeah.
My dad, and when I was writing this book,
Author David
one of the things that was big was the two biggest sports in America in the 40s, 50s, 60s baseball, was baseball and boxing. That was it. Yeah. If you were the heavyweight champ of the world, you were the biggest star in the world.
Yeah.
Because there was no internet, there was no phones, yeah, nothing. So Rocky Marciano was one of the biggest stars in the world, like him and Will Chamberlain, yeah, basically. And, you know, we don't see that anymore. You know, we don't see it anymore.
The Jersey Joe Walcott right hand knockout. Yeah,
I talk about that. That's in there's a couple good Rocky Marciano chapters in it. You're going to love this book. You're going to love it. Yeah.
Allie Colombo, Robin Blind. Who was the guy?
Cut it all.
Did he Robin Blind?
Allie?
Yeah. No, who was his manager?
No. Not Allie Colombo. Allie Colombo was his manager, but that was his brother-in-law.
Oh.
It was, what was the guy's name? It's in there.
Yeah, it was a mob guy. Colonel Tom Parker.
It was a mob guy that sold half his money.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it true that he died because he was very cheap? I remember hearing that.
Yes.
That he was so cheap that
this guy's fucking reading my mind, dude.
This guy knows. Listen, this guy's he's the answer man with everything, but especially Tom.
All in here.
Too bad we ended the episode.
What'd you say? I'm very smart.
I said, Mike, you are the smartest guy on the planet. But also with boxing, he's brilliant. Author David Wedge. He's got some books out. He wrote, what was the big one about the bombing?
Boston Strong.
Patriots Day. Amazing, amazing movie, amazing book. And these are some of his books right here.
So it's true, though. He was so Marvin Hagler.
What happened was he was in a previous plane crash because he did the same fucking thing. Rocky was in a previous plane crash.
What?
Yeah. What he would do, right?
He died in a plane crash.
Yeah. Yes. What he would do is the promoters would say, we're gonna leave a ticket at the gate for you for the fight and here to come out for the appearance or whatever it was. And he'd say, you know what? I don't want the ticket. I'm gonna sell the ticket. I'm gonna get my own transportation out there and I want you to pay me cash when I get there. So he'd go to the ticket window, pick up his fucking ticket, exchange it for cash, take that cash, walk out to the tarmac, pay some kid in a fucking little plane to fly him. And he did it one time and the plane made a crash landing and he lived. And the family was like, please don't ever do that again. And he fucking did it again. That's what
really? I didn't know that.
Right?
I know he died a
lot. Hey, listen.
Moral you learn a few story. Things around me.
No, listen. But moral no, listen. Story. This
stop
guy
being
knows.
Sheesh.
I know. Johnny. Listen. But listen, I got a little operating capital now. I'm good. But no, this guy is a wealth of knowledge, especially about boxing.
But a lot of stuff you hear like that, you don't know if it's true. Like,
no,
you know
it's, what I mean? Listen, so that's why you're like me. You know, you've heard everything for 56 years. I heard it all. Everything I heard, I researched
Justin.
And I either verified or debunked everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything in there is fact.
Take a picture.
Nothing in there.
That's fucking awesome. If you're wearing a mask out there, the fresh air's gonna get you. He always shoots from the hip.